Hey everyone, welcome to Neighbor Science. I'm Peter DeBeer, your resident correspondent in the Middle East.
Hello to all our followers. This is episode 9. I'm Ryan Salisbury, and we are happy to announce we've reached a follower count so high that it broke the servers that host our show. So they kicked us off temporarily, and the count is reset to 0. So
yeah. So
be sure to follow.
Yeah, it's not that we don't have any listeners. It's just that there's so many of you guys that you broke our servers.
Technology hasn't caught up to how many people like our show and listen to it every day.
Okay, so I believe that you caught up with Mr. Musk earlier today before the show.
I did. Yeah. Let's cut to that. Hello, Mr. Musk.
Yes. How do you do?
I do.
Excellent. I do as well.
Cool. So the reason I called you, Mr. Musk, is to give you a chance to respond to some criticisms against you lately. You know, we've been raking you over the coals pretty hard, and it's not fair for someone with a major platform like what we have to use it to pick on someone fairly helpless, like one of the world's most famous billionaires. So, you know, if you have anything to say, you have the floor.
Thank you. That's extremely generous. First of all, the idea that I can accomplish level 5 automation is rooted in ignorance. Scott Miller says level 5 automation is 15 years away, yet doesn't see the obvious implication. That's why he's just a manager, while I'm the most genius visionary innovator of this century. The key difference in our strategy is that he sees a technology as 15 years away and decides to throw his hands up and pour 15 years of research into it. I, on the other hand, realize that the best strategy is to simply go 15 years into the future and integrate the technology with what we have now. And thanks to my strategy, we'll beat him to the market with level 5 automation by 10 to 12 years. Second, I'll address the charge that I'm misleading investors. I have no idea why anyone would publicly say this. If you can be led at all, let alone misled, you're a sheep. Investors need to be wolves, not sheep. So, whiny investors, are you a wolf or are you a sheep?
I'm definitely a wolf.
I could tell you were a wolf. We can sniff out our own kind.
Absolutely. We hope to have you on again in the future. Thanks for that, Mr. Musk. So that was me talking to the famous Elon Musk, being very alpha while doing so, I must add. I'm definitely a wolf. I'm a wolf.
Not only are you a wolf, you're the least beta wolf I've ever heard.
I'm the alpha wolf of my wolf pack.
Of one.
Yeah. Well, no, there's others in my wolf pack. My dog.
Don't you have...
Yeah, my dog. That's
don't
about
you have
it.
A toy pom?
A toy pom? What is that?
A toy Pomeranian.
No. I have a 90-pound chocolate lab. He's a very manly dog, okay? He's got gray in his beard. He looks like George Clooney, but a dog.
Oh, that was good. That was good. I would love to see George Clooney as a dog.
I'll send you pictures. Now it's time for the Geekly Roundup.
Okay. So, in this week's Geekly Roundup, we take a look and we see that Thor Ragnarok had an early opening in the UK and in some Asian locations, of which I was very, very jealous. And so far, it has been a resounding success. It's managed to rake in about $13 million for the limited opening day. And meanwhile, I have to wait until Thursday, and I'm at extreme risk of seeing spoilers online, which will make me super depressed. And I live in a country that charges ridiculous amounts of money for alcohol, so I can't even drown my sorrows.
Yeah, I wasn't planning to see it, but I heard it was like more of a comedy, and it was pretty good. So Diane and I are going to see like the $5 matinee Sunday. So, yeah,
yeah. I told you last week that I have this thing about starting something, and once I'm a certain way into it, I have to finish it.
So you have to watch every movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, pretty much.
Jesus. That's that's an undertaking there.
it's a little bit sad, but it makes me a little bit happy. So I'm just gonna go with it.
I would rather watch every animated Marvel movie. That's first of all more doable, and second of all, yeah, more doable.
Well, on that note, there was there's a series of Marvel intellectual properties that was redone as Japanese anime, which I highly recommend.
I think I saw that. Yeah,
yeah. It's been a while. They did Iron Man. They did Wolverine. They did. I can't remember what all of it was now. It's on my hard drive somewhere, but I'm not going to take a look now. Yeah, some really good quality anime.
I want to see a live action remake of that.
That'd be... kick ass. Did you ever see the live action remake of Blood the Last Vampire?
I did not, no.
Okay, so Blood the Last Vampire was a really good anime, in my opinion. I'm not the world's foremost expert on anime. But it was a pretty awesome anime in my opinion. And they did it as a live action movie, and for once I watched something that had been taken from the anime and done into live action that I felt like the two were almost carbon copies of each other. I thought they were really well done.
Okay.
This was while I was still in South Africa though, and back then I was smoking a lot of marijuana, so it's entirely possible that that my judgment was impaired.
Have you ever seen a live action remake of an anime on weed?
Yeah. Okay, so in other news, the city of San Francisco has announced this week that it will be creating a fiber optic network throughout the city in order to ensure that all its citizens will be able to connect to the internet.
Oh, that must be
this,
nice.
Yeah, this of course raises an important question. If the tech capital of the United States is only now investing in citywide fiber optic data networks, how backwards is the rest of the U.S. in comparison? So I went and I asked some people that I know in the United States in various cities what their data infrastructure is like, but none of them were able to get back to me in time for the show due to poor connectivity issues.
Well, you didn't ask me, Peter. Guess we know the nature of our relationship now.
Okay. In my last story for this week's Geekly Roundup, ticket bookings for the upcoming Justice League movie have started going on sale. And early estimates are projecting that the film should have an opening weekend of around $110, $120 million in the US and in Canada. I think it'll be interesting to see how high Justice League can go in its opening weekend. Because the whole Justice League enterprise was concocted in response to Marvel's The Avengers franchise, which opened to $200 million on its opening weekend. But, I mean, even if you take that film out of the equation and only compare Justice League to other DC Extended Universe movies, it still has some serious competition. The only movie it's currently on pace to beat is Wonder Woman, which opened to $103 million, but then showed some serious legs at the box office and went on to earn $821 million worldwide and set several records. As for the other DCEU movies, like Man of Steel, which opened to $116 million, the very disappointing Batman vs. Superman, which opened to $166 million, and Steve Mnuchin's Suicide Squad, which opened $133 million. It's going to be a real toss-up. I'm looking forward to Justice League, but if the rest of Warner Brothers' DC universe is anything to go by, this could very easily be a miss. So it's possible that Justice League might have the highest opening weekend of any DCEU if its tracking improves, but it also has a much tougher frame. You know, Batman vs. Superman opened in March, Suicide Squad opened in August. Meanwhile, Justice League will have to fend off Thor Ragnarok, Daddy's Home 2, Murder on the Orient Express. I know, I just had to toss that one in there. And Warner Brothers is pretty much hoping that Justice League is the movie to see over the Thanksgiving holiday. But let's face it, that depends on critical response and word of mouth. And critical response for the DC movies in the past, other than Wonder Woman, has not been great.
Oh, and word of mouth has been pretty bad too, so...
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think they're getting much help. Man, that Murder on the Orient Express thing looks kind of bad, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I'm not going to lie. Everything that Johnny Depp has touched since, I think, Pirates of the Caribbean 3 has literally just become horrible.
Or Pirates of the Caribbean 1.
No, I enjoyed the first movie.
I did too, but I was also like 14 years old, so... That probably had a little to do with it.
God, is it that long ago?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Now I'm curious. Because at the time, there literally was nothing else out there that was even remotely the same. It was.
That's true, yeah.
I mean, okay, so it was back in 2003. Oh my god, how yep. old do I feel now?
Damn, I nailed that.
Wow.
But yeah, man, I like. Have you watched the David Suchet Poirot series?
It's like yeah.
That series owns, and they're not going to top it with this movie. There's no way.
In all honesty, even Steve Martin's he did a Pink Panther.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Thing back in the day, and
yeah,
it was bad,
but it wasn't terrible.
But it wasn't as bad as this is looking like it will be.
Yeah,
you know, I'm a big fan of the books, and so, oh goodness, why are they messing with stuff that I love?
Yeah,
Hollywood, get your head out of your ass.
Just get David Suchet to do the movie.
That's a good idea, actually. Okay, so that's your Geekly Roundup for this week. We'll be doing this as a regular thing now, so if anyone's got any news that they want me to share through the podcast, let us know in comments on our Facebook page or through Twitter or wherever the hell you can get a hold of us.
Hey, yeah. Carrier Pigeon, Smoke Signals... yeah.
Morse code on the inside of a submarine at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean. That's fine too.
Yeah, I don't know Morse code, but Peter does. You can reach me through several covert channels on I2P, the darknet. Yeah, just look for my EAP site. So after talking about all these huge numbers, we wanted to discuss a slightly unusual theory. As our listeners know, we love unusual theories, and we will always seek explanations for the mundane that have an unusual, probably untrue take.
Okay, so I came up with this really genius topic, given the time of year that we're dealing with now, and this is what is known in investment circles as the Halloween strategy.
It's very spooky.
Yeah, 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 very spooky. A Halloween strategy is an investment technique in which an investor sells stocks before the 1st of May and then doesn't reinvest in the stock market until the 31st of October, Halloween, in order to increase their capital gains.
I don't understand this at all, but it sounds genius.
The Halloween strategy is based on the premise that most capital gains are made between October 31st and the 1st of May, and that the other 6 months of the year should be spent investing in other investment types, or not at all. Okay, so are we going to jump on the fact that this is sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy? Get enough people to believe in the Halloween strategy, and the Halloween strategy becomes true. Because no one else is investing, investment rates become pretty low, and so it doesn't make much sense to invest in that time of the year, because it basically says market efficiency drops out the window.
So I guess what we need to do if we want to become smart investors is develop the meme strategy, where we just get everyone to sell at a certain time through memes, and then we will take advantage of that somehow. I don't really know how the stock market works, so I don't know if we would sell short or buy or whatever the fuck, but
yeah,
you know what I'm getting at.
Is it a bull market or a bear market? I've never understood which one of the two is which.
It is a dog market.
Ah.
Yeah.
A badger market.
Badger market, yeah.
Honey badger, it's very volatile. So, just to give some background on the Halloween strategy, two researchers by the name of Bowman and Jacobson, back in 2002, they went and examined the years 1970 to 1998. And what they did was they documented unusually high monthly returns during the November to April periods for both the United States and foreign stock markets, and they then went on to label this as the Halloween effect. Their research suggested that the Halloween effect represents an exploitable anomaly and has negative implications for claims of stock market efficiency. Two more researchers, Edwin Maberly and Raylene Pierce, then re-examined Bowman and Jacobson's empirical results for the U.S., and their analysis revealed that Bowman and Jacobson's results were driven by two outliers. First was the crash of October in 1987, and the collapse of the hedge fund Long Term Capital Management in August of 1998.
What a great name.
Yeah, that is so innovative, and because we all know how capitalists love to innovate.
Yeah.
So in their research, what they did is they inserted a dummy variable so as to account for the impact of the two identified outliers, and suddenly the Halloween effect became statistically insignificant. Meaning that the anomaly is not economically exploitable for U.S. equity markets. They then extended the research to the S&P 500 futures contract and found no evidence of an exploitable Halloween effect over the period of April 1982 to 2003. So, like much of the investment world, it's mostly crap and orchestrated by a few who know how to manipulate most of the investment market into buying and selling when they want them to.
I disagree. It seems extremely effective as long as you're investing in October 1987 or August 1998. I don't see a problem with that.
Halloween strategy, when someone tells you to sell in May and buy again in Halloween, tell them to fuck off. They are basically trying to manipulate you into making something that they think works work by virtue of telling you that it works.
Unless you're in October 1987, and they're being very friendly and nice, and you should listen to them.
Yeah, and in that case, they are trying to save you, and in all honesty, then it's probably either me or Ryan who have invented time travel and have come back to warn you.
Or Elon Musk being a very generous, nice guy.
Yeah, and we all know what a generous, nice guy he is. Puerto Rico!
Okay, so we wanted to read some Trump tweets, right?
Oh yeah, dude, he just tweeted again.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm starting to wonder if he ever does anything else. Does he do anything in the Oval Office? Or is that all just aides?
Writes fake news.
But he writes it on Twitter.
drinks kafifi.
Is that how it's pronounced? Kofefe?
No, it's kafifi. Yeah. No, you're pronouncing it the official Middle Eastern way, where it's actually a word. Which is what he wrote, but, you know, it's just taken on a life of its own here in the States.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, we're going to read some Trump tweets. We're going to do our best Trump impersonations. Should I start?
Yeah, you give it a go first, because I've got to get in character.
All right.
It takes me a while to dumb down that far.
Yeah, okay. All right, doing my best Trump here. The fake news is going crazy with wacky Congressman Wilson D, who was secretly on a very personal call and gave a total lie on content. That was good, right?
No, that was terrible. Okay, I'm going to do
one. I thought it was spot on.
And I'm going to do one, and I hope you can learn from me.
All right, I'll try to imitate yours. How about that?
And then improve on what you just did, because that was atrocious.
Okay.
So, just out report. United Kingdom crime rises 13% annually amid spread of radical Islamic terror. Not good. We must keep America safe.
Dude, what the fuck was that? There's no way that was better than mine.
That's Trump, man.
No. All right, I'm going to do Trump, okay? I'm going to do it. All right.
Okay.
Crooked Hillary Clinton spent hundreds of millions of dollars more on presidential election than I did. Facebook was on her side, not mine.
Dude, are you doing William Shatner or Donald Trump?
No, that was Donald Trump. That's what he sounds like.
Is there something like... Do the videos in the United States show you something different to what I see here?
Dude, you just don't know American accents that well. You don't know it as well as you think you do, because you're not from here. I know every American accent.
All of them? Okay. So I'm going to do another one, and then you tell me whether or not I'm getting it right.
Okay.
Because I think my Donald Trump is perfect. I've been told by people that I sound exactly like him. Okay. I agree. Getting tax cuts approved is important. We will also get health care. But perhaps no administration has done more in its first 9 months than this administration. Over 50 legislation approvals, massive regulation cuts, energy freedom, pipelines, border security, Second Amendment, strong military, ISIS, historic VA improvement, Supreme Court justice, record stock market, lowest unemployment in 17 years.
Wrong.
Damn.
That was a Trump there. Yeah, I had no idea what you were doing there.
I felt like I was channeling Trump there.
No, I'll show you how it's done. Okay. Subject to the receipt of further information, I will be allowing, as president, the long blocked and classified JFK files to be opened. That was good. That was really good. Come on, you gotta admit that.
Dude, you make me want to cry.
Why? What was wrong with that? That was perfect.
I don't understand how you think you sound like Trump.
That sounds just like that guy that was running for president. What are you talking about?
Bernie Sanders?
No, the other guy.
Dude, it sounded like Bernie Sanders. If Bernie Sanders were to ever say something that stupid.
Yeah, I don't think that was Bernie Sanders, personally. But okay, you know. All right, okay. Let's see how you do it then.
Okay. Uranium deal to Russia. With Clinton help and Obama administration knowledge, is the biggest story that fake media doesn't want to follow.
No, that wasn't it.
Am I at least getting closer?
I guess, yeah. You still don't have the accent down. All right, this is gonna be my last one. If I don't nail it this time, then I guess I'm just not gonna get it. Okay. Democratic Congresswoman totally fabricated what I said to the wife of a soldier who died in action. And I have proof. Sad. No?
Wow.
I thought it was good. Wow. All right, we got to move on, obviously, because we're not going to get this. We got to keep working on the Trump impersonation. I mean, yeah. You know, it's a comedy goldmine that almost no one is touching, doing Trump impersonations and making fun of Trump tweets.
But yeah, I mean, who's ever done a Trump impersonation? No one's ever done that.
No one famous. It's weird, you know. Famous. Everyone was making fun of Bush, but I mean, Trump, he's just so ridiculous, and no one's making jokes about him. I don't get it.
Yeah,
anyway,
well,
you know.
Okay. So, since we're talking about the Trump tweets, I did want to talk about one of the tweets that Trump tweeted, and that's his release of the JFK documents. And I think it's important today that we expose what is essentially a massive conspiracy to distract from issues like the humanitarian crisis in Puerto Rico, the four U.S. soldiers killed in an ambush in Niger, Sean Spicer getting grilled this week by the team investigating Russian interference in the U.S. presidential elections, and criticism from both of the last two presidents of the U.S. And just at a time when all these issues are coming to a head, suddenly we start hearing about the JFK assassination. Yes, that was a moment of silence for the death.
I didn't know if you were trying to find your place again or what.
No, I was literally just giving a moment of silence for the death of journalistic integrity in the United States.
Yeah, you can't see me because it's a podcast, but I'm drinking 40 right now, and I poured some of it out for my homie JFK.
Yeah. Okay. Now, let's just look at what he did actually release. So the files have been released on Thursday, which as of right now is yesterday. Essentially, the federal government released thousands of documents related to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in 1963.
I hope it's just 1,000 pages that say Hillary did it. That would fucking rule. That'd be so good.
Oh god. They found emails from those days. So the papers were posted online by the National Archives, which does comply with the 1992 law that requires their release after 25 years. That's when the moratoria legally has to be lifted. And the only person that could have prevented their release is the president himself.
So he didn't release them, he just didn't prevent them from being released? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
However, after what was essentially a chaotic last-minute review in which intelligence agencies lobbied against full disclosure, the White House then said it would take more time to process and release thousands more documents that were also supposed to be made public. It set a deadline of late April, 2018, for the release of those documents. Trump released a memorandum in which he cited security concerns. And I'm left sitting here reading all of this going, what the fuck? What could possibly have happened 25 years ago that illustrates security concerns for the United States today?
The end of the Cold War.
That's does not. Yeah, it doesn't pose any threat. So, like, this in essence kind of proves my conspiracy theory in this case, that all of this is a distraction. And it's something that Trump has become essentially, I think that is his actual purpose, within the Republican Party, within U.S. politics in general, is to act as the ultimate distraction from everything else that might be going on. I mean, at the end of the day, the decision to postpone the release of some documents will invariably lead to suspicion that government is still protecting secrets about the case. So whether or not there are actually any secrets worth keeping, it doesn't matter. The conspiracy crowd is going to jump on this. And it's going to make news headline after news headline after news headline. And the more coverage this story gets, the less coverage is given to stuff like the plight of the Puerto Rican people. Stuff like the investigation into Russian interference in U.S. politics, which, look, I think is a bit of a red herring as it is, because the U.S. is not exactly innocent when it comes to interfering in the politics of other nations.
Yeah, but also, like, their whole thing is, like, Russia spent, what, like, a thousandth of a percent of what the Hillary Clinton campaign spent.
Yeah.
But they somehow changed the outcome of it. I mean, it's just like it's a fucking conspiracy theory by centrists to reconcile the fact that they don't know what the fuck they're talking about politics. They don't understand it at all. So they think Donald Trump is this weird anomalous thing. It's part of worldwide phenomenon where fascist leaders are rising up everywhere in the world all at the same time because of the same exact causes. And so they have to invent this fucking conspiracy theory to try and, you know, make themselves feel better about being too stupid to understand how politics works.
Yeah. And just for those who are not aware, please look up the rise of the right wing globally. And ask yourself, when last the far right held this much authority in German parliament?
Yeah, I mean, they won it there. They won it in the Netherlands, if I remember. Mm-hmm. They almost won in France. They almost won in the UK.
One could argue that with Brexit, they won regardless.
The Brexit thing. Fortunately, Corbyn stymied that effort a bit. And then, like, Eastern Europe, there's a bunch of countries, many of which I don't even know because I'm American, so I'm going to use that as my excuse, that have far-right leaders as well. And I think they actually even had it, like, earlier than anyone else. They had the far-right uprising. And then, like I said, Duterte in the Philippines. Abe has become very right-wing. If I remember, Xi Jinping's new thing is pretty right-wing. It's everywhere. And the idea that it's happening in the U.S. because of a fucking Russian conspiracy is some, like, dumbass, Cold War red-baiting bullshit, you know?
At the end of the day, the whole thing just boils down to Hillary supporters being unable to acknowledge that they made some really big mistakes heading into the presidential elections. They backed the wrong candidate. They screwed everything up. And, while Trump distracts from his many mistakes in office, I think we need to talk about the fact that the DNC simply doesn't know how to learn from their mistakes.
Yeah. As some of you might know, The DNC Rules Commission recently changed leadership and basically doubled down on everything that they did wrong in 2016. So they essentially kicked out the progressive wing of the Democrats from the Rules Commission, elevated people like Donna Brazile, who, if you recall, fed Hillary debate questions in advance during the primary to try and get a leg up on Bernie. And this is on top of, you know, the release that showed that they already heavily favored Hillary in advance. They also are doubling down on superdelegates. So pretty much everyone outside of the DNC hates superdelegates and thinks that they are antithetical to democracy, because they are. And so I can't remember her name, but someone who was previously posing as a progressive, who now has a position of semi-authority on the DNC, was giving a press release, and she essentially said, "We will never get rid of superdelegates." And then when, you know, pressed about it, you know, the interviewer was actually pretty good and was asking, like, "Isn't this counter to democracy?" And she was like, "Yeah, but, you know, we're not getting rid of them." So, yeah, that's what they're doing. So I don't have high hopes for the next election, honestly. The next national election, that is.
Representative democracy for the win.
Yeah. And, so just because this show didn't exist then, I would like to point out that I predicted that Donald Trump would win the presidential election over a year in advance.
Peter, I remember probably remembers
this. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember doing the same thing on my own wall, saying, "Watch, here it comes."
I bet Diane $50 that he would win, and she took the bet because she thought it was totally ridiculous and it would be an easy $50 for her to get. Didn't have the heart to take the money from her when he won.
Aren't you a nice guy?
My
goodness. Oh, wait, no. Because we said that Trump was going to win, we automatically are Trump supporters and hate democracy and hate puppies and murder babies. And
yeah, I mean, I am a Trump supporter, you know. I think he's a great guy.
A great guy.
Yeah.
That's why you can do his accent so well.
Actually, he's a nice guy. yeah, so in other political news, I've been canvassing for a state delegate in Manassas, Virginia, which is right near where I live. Candidate Lee Carter. He's a really cool dude. He's an actual leftist. And because of that, he's mostly been abandoned by the Democratic Party. They are not giving him any funds, mostly because he has, as he says, security concerns about the IT infrastructure that they use to report canvassing data, which, I mean, I don't know particulars about that, but I could totally see it, because the canvassing app that the Democratic Party developed is garbage. Minivan, terrible app. I could do it better. yeah, so he's running against Jackson Miller, who's an incumbent. I think he's been in power for at least two terms. So Lee is intentionally not taking money from corporations. He's trying to run his campaign exclusively on donations from individuals, much like Bernie did. And Jackson Miller, on the other hand, took $81,000this month, from the Virginia Realtors Association. And the big legislative push they want is to make it legal for realtors to sell you a house that has black mold in it without disclosing it.
Wait, what?
Stuff like that. Yeah, they want to be able to sell you a house without telling you how fucked up it is, basically.
that they want to be able to sell you a house without telling you that it's a death trap.
I mean, you can live in a house with black mold. I lived in a house with black mold for like 4 years. It's fine, but it also sucks. you get sick a lot.
This opens the gates for them to essentially prey on poor people that can't afford to get health insurance.
Yeah. I mean, for me, the worst thing would be if they sold you a house that has bed bugs in it and didn't tell you. That would be the fucking worst.
Yeah, no.
And basically would cause an epidemic of bed bugs in Virginia, for sure.
We are referring to the great bed bug debacle of, was it 2015 or 2016?
It was 2014.
2014.
Yeah. Good times. Yeah.
Bed bugs. Absolutely horrible. Okay. So now we're going to do something completely different. It's easily one of the greatest stories I've ever come across in my time on the internet.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
I first heard about it on BBC while driving to a meeting with a client of mine. And I was so excited that I actually left the meeting early. I wrapped things up as quickly as I could so that I could get home, so that I could look up and thoroughly understand the story of the Japanese ninja cat burglar. Police in Osaka have finally, and when I say finally, I mean after 8 years, they have finally nabbed a nimble ninja thief who dressed in black and scrambled over walls and across roofs to commit scores of break-ins over what was essentially an 8-year-long career. And when they finally unmasked him, they found, to their astonishment, that he is 74 years old.
That rules.
I want that to sink in for a moment so that every one of our listeners who is not living up to their full potential can feel like a complete fucking idiot. 74-year-old man is dressing up as a ninja and totally living the life as a cat burglar.
Y'all have no excuse not to get swole.
That's exactly my point. I've wanted to be a cat burglar since I was a little kid. You know, other kids are like, I want to be a doctor, or I want to be a lawyer, or I want to be world president. I wanted to be a cat burglar. I watched movies like The Real McCoy and Ocean's 11 and not the new version. I'm talking about the original, not the Brad Pitt, George Clooney one, which
I
wasn't
like
that bad when it first started. But yeah. Okay, so originally, police had been stumped by a string of burglaries, and their only lead had been security camera footage showing what looked like just an agile thief with a black neck warmer pulled up to the nose and a parka hood down to the eyebrows. One of the senior officials at the Kawachi police station was quoted as saying he was dressed all in black, just like a ninja. But unfortunately, back in May, he made a little bit of a mistake, and his neck warmer slipped, and his identity was revealed on camera. Police recognized their man as Mitsuaki Tanigawa, who he did have a previous record of theft, and they started.
I bet they looked at his file and were just like, "Nah, I can't be this guy."
Well, they did start watching him. And they tried to trap him. Another official from the police station was quoted as saying, investigators watched him doddering out from his house like any other old man during daytime, and then went to an abandoned apartment room where he changed and waited until it got dark. When he came out in the dark, he was all in black. He did not take ordinary streets, squeezing through tight spaces between houses and running on the tops of walls. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that my childhood dreams were made of.
Somebody needs to make a movie of this.
They really do.
Jet Li or Jackie Chan are like 70 years old, just make a fucking movie of this. It would be awesome.
Yeah, Exactly. Write the script now, cast them now, and just wait for the opportune moment.
Yeah, I mean, it would be perfect for Jackie Chan because it'd be a great action comedy for sure.
Exactly. Anyway, so Mr. Tanigawa
yeah.
Has been charged. Wait for it. For over 254 break-ins. And for thefts totaling 30 million yen over the past 8 years. That works out to about $260,000 worth of theft. He apparently later told police that he needed only 10 minutes to sneak into a house, stealing mainly cash from people as they slept. He's a pro. Like, it doesn't get any better than this.
Yeah.
While you're sleeping, a ninja broke into your house and stole money out of your wallet. Like, Bill Murray couldn't write a story better than this.
Can you even get mad about that? Like,
a
ninja breaks into your house? You're going to get pissed about that? Really? Come on.
No. I would not be pissed at all. I would feel like I had paid an adequate sum of money for that experience. He did go on to say that if he were younger, he doesn't think he would have been caught. It is because of his age. And he did say that he's going to quit now because at 74 years old, he feels like he's done enough.
And they should just let that guy go.
They really should. This is one of the coolest stories I've ever read in my entire life. And I take my hat off to you, Mr. Tanigawa.
Yeah, man. I've always wanted to be a ninja. That, you know, you said cat burglar. I always wanted to be a ninja. I read, you know, books about doing ninja shit. Like, you know, tried to practice it when I was a kid and stuff like that. I never got any of the tools. I really wanted some of the ninja tools, like the cat claws. They're like things that go on your hands so you can, like, scale up walls.
Yeah, those would be cool.
Those things were fucking cool. Look, you know, I'm continuing my training. I'm actually lifting right now. obviously, you can't see, but, you know, I got some dumbbells. I'm lifting right now.
Dude, I have every ounce of confidence that you will one day be of ninja quality.
Yeah, I mean, I've got, 46 years to go?
Yeah.
Before my chances are really gone.
And look, even then, Tanigawa has shown us the way, and that age doesn't necessarily need to mean that we have to stop. It does mean we might get caught, but fucking worth it, man, to live the life of a ninja.
All right, I guess that's all we got today.
That's all we have for today. Thank you very much to everyone for tuning in and listening to us prattle on about nothing in particular. We will be back next week with a more coherent episode. I think it's kind of more relaxing to stagger them out this way, where we do one topically relevant or topically coherent episode and then a more relaxed episode where we just chat.
Yeah, so have we decided what our next one is? I don't think we have yet.
I don't think we have, so we're not going to tell our audience now. But as soon as we're done, we're going to furiously brainstorm this in a Facebook chat. So, yeah.
It's either one thing or a different thing. Those are our choices right now.
You mean that thing and that thing?
Okay. No. No, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so look forward to either one thing or another thing for our next episode. yeah. So, you know, typical closing shit. You can follow us on Facebook. Neighbor Science is our Facebook page. Twitter. The Twitter is Neighbor Sci Pod. The regular Neighbor Science name is already taken, unfortunately. I'm Handle of Rye with underscores and no E, like handle, like the booze handle of rye. Peter's is Nabe Scientist with the last I missing.
And
Navy scientist.
We are the worst named people on Twitter.
I think Handle of Rye is good. I think it's clever and fun. The only mistake I made was putting underscores in it, which no one thinks to put. But yeah, we're on iTunes and Stitcher. So if you have either of those apps, you can get us there instead of the website. If you listen on iTunes, give us a rating because it'll help us climb the rankings of the podcast military. We want to be the generalissimos of podcasting.
Yeah. I want to be a Che Guevara of podcasting.
Yeah, for sure. And if you're on Stitcher, it's possible to rate it, but I don't know if it does anything. So just do it anyway.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you have a good week.
All right.
When you see us walking down the street, run the other way.